Well, I'm looking forward to this session because I'm still finishing breakfast. Hope y'all are too. If you didn't get bacon, there's still a lot of bacon back there, and it's just perfect if you like it crispy. If you don't go. Leave it for me. I'll get it during the break. I've already decided. There's a microwave here somewhere, Jeff, right?
There's one over there. We can go grab it.
Okay, yeah, because what I'm going to do is I'm going to take about 6 pieces of bacon and 2 bags of those M&Ms and lay over the top of them. About 90 seconds. Fellas, we got a highway right there. I mean, it's going to be awesome. You're going to want to join me. So last night, draw near in full assurance of faith. But the way we do it is we struggle through disappointment, betrayal, fear, doubt. And ultimately, we get to a place where we remember the past. And open-handedly, we surrender and we say, okay, God, grow my faith, grow my faith. What did you talk about around the tables? Any comments, observations, questions? You know, I don't think I'm the only one here supposed to be communicating truth. You're doing it to each other when you turn in your groups, and I'm grateful for that time. But anything maybe you shared last night or you heard some guy share that you go, hey, I think the whole group needs to hear this. Just open the floor up for a couple of minutes. Any comment, observations, any questions that you got, I would really like to bring to the forefront. Yeah.
Life, which was really, I think, rich, because one guy was, you know, 5 months into a new job. One guy's struggle was a little bit in trying to figure out how to navigate starting retirement. One guy had been 10 years retired, and I was kind of halfway in the middle of that. So it was cool because we could have somebody say what they're struggling about, and then somebody else in the group can say, okay, I've been, I was there, I remember that. As to how you can navigate through that. And so it was good because we all kind of overlapped each other and I think complemented with having different guys and different people in our group.
Maybe there really is something about this older, younger combination from time to time, right? Thanks, Matt. Other things, observations, questions, just things to encourage the group. Let me open the floor up.
Something I was really struggling with.
Can y'all hear Paul back there?
Cycle time can be really long. And I was noticing I was with a brother who had gone through something really tough, but he was getting right back on his horse. Whereas I was noticing in my life that it was taking me a lot longer to really get back to being faithful.
Great. I appreciate that. Shortening the cycle. Yeah. Anybody else? Other observations? Something good for the whole, just real quick. Yeah.
Stuff that we don't want to face or others to see. And then you share that and you find out, you know what, we're really not in a world of our own.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm not that different, am I? Maybe there's a nuance difference, but at the core, we're all walking out our journeys. Appreciate that. Anybody else? Yeah.
This isn't something you said, but this is something funny that happened. We were catching up and something in passing that I didn't want to talk about, but he knew I needed to talk about it. So I kind of changed the subject. We're leaving. I get in the car. I'm like, sweet, I'm good. I made it. And I look at my phone. I'm getting a call. I answer. And Blake's like, hey, man, we're going to talk about this right now. And he, went out of his way to force me to do it. But it was, I just appreciated that.
That's good. I hope you all heard that, because that's a powerful picture of how we do life together as men. I will hide as long as you will let me. But a faithful friend will go, I see that little mask, and I'm going to ask you to take it off again. Yeah, that's great, Darden. Thanks. Anybody else? A couple other things, maybe. Yeah.
It was nice to see how 8 men had different disappointments and fear, and how God is faithful. Bringing up that God is definitely.
Yeah. No matter how bleak, his faithfulness remains. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Hey, in groups of 2 or 3, start with this question and just spend a minute or so on it. What are you hoping for? What are you hoping for in your life? Now, let me tell you how you can answer it. You can answer it really, well, I'm hoping my kids turn out just fine. Or I hope the stock market keeps growing. You can do that. I'm talking about really. If you can be courageous this morning, if you can't, talk about your kids, and that's cool. No judgment, I promise. But if you can be courageous, say, you know what I'm really hoping for in my life? Here's what shows up in my brain pretty often. I'm hoping for. Take about a minute and a half with a couple guys and share. What are you hoping for this morning? All right. Let me put this back together here. Kind of doing what we did last night, just for a minute. In one word, just have you shout out, kind of popcorn style, in one word, what are some of the things that you heard? Some of the things that you find yourself hoping for? Just in one word. You don't have to give context for it. Just what's the one word? Let me hear some things.
Bacon.
Bacon. I can take care of you on that one. I can make that hope a reality really quick.
Stock market.
Stock market.
Relationship.
Relationship.
Impact.
Passion.
Passion.
Purpose.
Significance.
Significance. Contentment. Fulfillment.
Legacy.
Be a vessel.
Consecration.
Consecration. There's a good old word right there. Consecration. Dedication. What else?
Joy.
I usually hear the word freedom. But that takes courage to talk about freedom. Because you know what it means? It means I'm in bondage. Fellas, there's a lot of us that probably need freedom also. All of these things, though, are awesome because they're things we hope for. They're things we long for. And part of what it means to be alive, this is a phrase I use all the time, part of what it means to be alive is that we are people of hope. We are people of hope. The writer of Hebrews, you know, last night he told us, let us draw near with a true heart and full assurance of faith. And, you know, we talked about faith last night. Tonight, as we move into hope, in verse 23 of Hebrews 10, the writer says this, let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering. For he who promised is faithful. Oh, we've connected the two, haven't we? Hope and faith, they're going to kind of go together as we'll see today. Hold fast the confession of hope. Again, remember the context of Hebrews. It's a horrible time. It's a difficult time. Persecution is rampant. And these believers are saying, how in the world do we endure? How do we keep going? How do we work through these times of struggle, these times of difficulty? And the writer says, hold fast. It's a picture of a tight grip. It's a picture of saying, you've got something good, just hold on to it. Without wavering, literally the idea there is like a straight arrow. You know, keep walking in a straight direction. There is a way to walk in. Walk in it. He says the last part may be so critical. He says, for he who has promised is faithful. There's the focus on the future again. The one who has promised out there one day, he's faithful. He's going to show up. As you look back and you remember that he's faithful, guess what? It allows your hope to begin to percolate and grow. You know, I think if you surveyed a group of Americans and said, hey, define hope for us, we get a lot of different definitions of hope. I came across a definition I want to share with you that I think is a great representative of how our culture at large probably would define hope. It's a guy named Charles Snyder, who's a positive psychologist, who says, hope is a motivational state, motivational, key word, is a motivational state that engages both being able to set goals and figure out different ways to get to a better future. Is that what we're talking about for hope? And there's nothing wrong with setting goals. I think it's pretty important to do with whatever you're doing in life. And there's nothing wrong with making a strategy to get to a better future. I think that's something every individual, every family, every business has to do. But is that what Scripture is teaching us about when it says we need to hold fast to the confession of hope? Or is it something a little different than that? See, so often I think we take that definition of hope and our hope becomes wishful thinking. I'm just hoping, proverbial fingers crossed, that fill in the blank. And we live with this sense of maybe something will happen. But throughout the Bible, when we see hope, hope is rooted to something more than just wishful thinking. It's rooted to more than just desire. Hope is actually rooted in certainty. Doesn't that sound just the opposite of what hope means? Hope is, I really hope I can get that better job. I have no guarantee, but I'm hoping. But when we think of biblical hope is rooted in something that's very, very certain. I hope I will get a better job. I hope Jesus will return one day. Do those sound like two different usages of the word hope? The first hope is, man, I don't get to control it, but I hope they hire me. The second hope is, I hope I live with expectation because I have a steadfast confidence that God's word has said it, so therefore one day he will do it. We want to hold fast to a hope that's true, that's rich. I think of it this way. You're going to discover, if you haven't already, that I can't draw at all. But matter of fact, I shouldn't even do this, but I'm going to try. Okay, so we could play the guessing game, but it would be such a waste of time. Hammer? Palm tree? We'll be here all day. Stop. Okay, I can't believe y'all can't see it. It's so obvious. It's an anchor. Can't you see that now? It's not going to hold your boat, but it's an anchor, okay, in my simplified, sanctified imagination. You know, hope really is an anchor. Last night as we talked about faith, what I didn't say but what I think about when I think about faith is where we kind of anchor down. You know, we go back to what we know to be true. We go back to those stones of remembrances that are piled up in our story, and we throw the anchor in it. We go, man, I'm solid. I can hold on to this. God is faithful. God is able. There's our anchor. But I think when we start talking about hope, it's like the anchor flips. And we're still anchored, but we're not anchored down. At this point, we're anchored up. Can I explain what I mean by that? In Hebrews 6, four chapters earlier than where we are this weekend, verses 19 and 20, the writer of Hebrews says, talking about Jesus having entered the Holy of Holies and Jesus being all we need to be rightly connected to God, he says, and we have this hope as an anchor for the soul. You know what this is in Hebrews 6? The hope is that Jesus sits at the right hand of the Father. He has ripped the curtain in two. He gives us complete direct access to God. That's the hope we have as an anchor. That's why I think it's more like the hope that's anchored up. It's anchored up to the one who sits at the right hand of the Father saying, I can hope in the truth that I know that you are there for me. That's a different kind of hope. It's an absolute certainty. It's anchored up. I always think of the old picture of Batman. You know, when Batman used to pull his anchor off of his belt, which he had more stuff in that belt, didn't he? And he could just whip it around and throw it up, and he and Robin could climb any building there was with their anchor. Why? Because it was anchored to something solid. Our hope is anchored to someone solid, anchored to one that is bigger than us. And that's really how the cycle of hope begins. It's when we acknowledge, you know, we have this anchor for the soul. We have something that's bigger than just our story today. But you know what happens to hope? Even though we can quote Jeremiah 29, I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you, the word shalom, peace, plans to give you a hope and a future. Even though we can talk a whole lot about Psalm 27, I would have despaired unto death had I not seen the goodness of the Lord while yet in the land of the living, you hear the hope. Even though we know all about hope, the truth is we know that there's a time, there's seasons, when just like we lose faith, we can lose hope. Matter of fact, if you'll go back to I know you can't read it, but this is just the cycle we drew last night. Faith, disappointment, betrayal, fear, doubt, struggle, remembering the past, surrender. If we go back to this part of the cycle, that part that we can get trapped in sometimes and just get in that loop that never ends, like an old scratch in an old LP. For those young guys, there used to be music that came in these round thing called discs. No, but you know, we have a chance to be able to get stuck in this place. What happens in those moments is, as our faith wanes, as our faith gets off track, it's like there's this direct correlation that this anchor that we have, it also gets off track. You see, anytime my faith feels weak, my hope begins to go weak. It's not that we're going, oh, my faith is super strong, but I have no hope that God can come through for me. It's like when I forget to anchor down to what he's done, I lose contact of what I'm anchored up to as well. How is it that we move from this anchor that we know is so secure, that we know is so safe, that we know is so good, that we know is so right, that we know is so all-sufficient? How do we move from that place of hope to this place of, I'll call it this for today, this place of despair, even at times a sense of, man, I am so powerless. There's nothing I can do about this. We all know what it's like to get to that place where we lose hope. You know, the Proverbs talk about hope deferred grows the heart weary, grows the heart sick. We long for something and it doesn't show up and we get to this place of despair. So I have a question for us. How does our hope get weary? How does our hope start to disappoint? How do we get to this place of despair and powerlessness and hope? We're hoping for something really good. What shifts? What is it that happens around us that causes it to change? Let's be honest, man. We've all had that moment in life when we said, okay, new commitment. I remember in my college and grad school days, you know, I was a good kid, following Christ, wanted to walk well, but I had this weakness called girls. And so, you know, I'd start hanging out with a certain girl and we'd become more than friends and something would happen and something would I'd cross this line and then I'd be like driving home. That's it. I'll never do that again, you know. And I wouldn't until the next night, you know. And there was just this crazy cycle where I'd be like, oh, man, I keep. And after a while, you start going, I keep hoping I'm going to change. But I'm back here again. It happens to us in so many different ways. What happens? That takes us from that moment of steadfast confidence, anchored down. God is faithful. He can be all I need. I know he's there, right, anchored up. And suddenly my hope just wanes again. About 2 minutes in groups of two or three. What causes our hope to wane? Discuss that with each other. About 3 minutes. Go. All right, let me pull us back together for a sec. It would be fascinating, you know, to go around the room and say, hey, let's call off all the stuff that we heard, because the answers are legion. There are many answers that cause us to lose hope, that cause our hope to begin to wane, that causes us to begin to go, man, I'm just not sure. but I think if I could summarize it from the scripture, I think there's three words we could use that really kind of summarize what lead us to this place of despair, this place of powerlessness, this place of, it's just never going to work out. I had hoped. Remember the travelers on the road to Emmaus? You know, they've seen this amazing thing that's happened over the years of following Jesus and watching him, and then they see him crucified. And at the end of the day of crucifixion, they start walking the 7-mile walk to Emmaus. And unbeknownst to them, Jesus shows up. One of my favorite stories in the Bible, it's like, well, what is he like wearing? Like, you know, a hoodie? Like, how do they not know it's Jesus? You know, but he's just kind of his little ghetto clothes. He's walking beside them, and maybe he's got Stu Weber's voice so they don't recognize him. I don't know. But anyway, they're walking along together, and Jesus says, hey, why are you so downcast? What's going on? Downcast. Do you hear that word for despair and powerlessness? Why are you so downcast? Well, have you not heard? And I just die laughing when I read that. Have you not heard? He was the one on the cross, dude. He knew all about what happened in Jerusalem. But have you not heard what happened? Jesus, the one from Nazareth. They crucified him. They put him to death. And then those powerful words, we had hoped. We had hoped he was the one that was going to redeem Israel. But instead, we all know that place of despair and powerlessness. And there's a lot of reasons we get to that place. Disappointment, expectations, tons of words we could use. But can I summarize them in three words that the scripture talks about that are the three biggest enemies to our soul? And it's these words right here. I'll write them all at once. They make this concentric circles. The world, our flesh, and the evil one, Satan. At the core, if I can break it all down and summarize it, what moves our hope to this place of despair and powerlessness is one of those three things. It's the world. Y'all, we live in a world that's broken. Nothing works ultimately. We went through a season not long ago where, you know, we had a dishwasher go out, got it fixed. And honestly, before it got fixed, it felt like the garbage disposal thing locked up and stopped working. And by the time we got it fixed, guess what happened to the fridge? And finally, the appliances are all good. But then I go to get my car, you know, through the emissions thing and find out I have a $2,000 catalytic converter I need to replace. You know, all in about 30 days. It just reminds you, everything breaks. This world falls apart. But how do I live? I live with a hope that nothing bad will happen. I live with an expectation that it shouldn't fall apart. So when the dishwasher gets clogged, I get mad at it. I mean, how insane is that? Because things break. Just living in a broken world causes our hope to wax and wane. Man, it's not just appliances and cars. It's disease. It's death. It's hurricanes. It's tornadoes. It's damage. There's a million things that happen in a broken world. We are not in Eden. This place is not perfect. And because of what happens in this world, sometimes my hope goes to that place of despair. There's my flesh. Oh, my goodness. Nothing can disappoint me like me. Nothing can cause me to lose hope like my own flesh. Sometimes it's my intention versus my practice. I will eat healthy. And then Eric brings in a mountain of bacon. I mean, how are you ever going to eat healthy, right? Or think about all the different places where our flesh trips us up. I have this desire to walk this way, but boy, my action looks really different. Sometimes it's inability. Sometimes I just sabotage. Whatever it is, I'm like Paul in Romans 7. When I want to do good, I end up doing evil, and dadgummit, my hope goes right back in the toilet. The world, the flesh, and Satan. Y'all, because I was raised with the Pentecostals, this is the one that always scares me to talk about. Because in the Pentecostal world that I was raised in, Satan made you buy a bad pair of jeans. I mean, he did everything, right? And I don't want to give him too much due, but I also don't want to ignore that there is one, Jesus said, who exists to kill, steal, and destroy. He's the enemy of your soul. How does he work? I'll never fully understand. I think sometimes, though, the key tool he has, probably the only tool he has, is the power of deception. And you know where that plays out? Right here. And he's called the father of lies. That's why I'm pretty sure his tool that in his toolbox is deception. But we get caught up believing stuff that simply won't give us life. And so maybe God didn't say what he said like Adam and Eve said in the garden. And suddenly this thing of hope anchored up so confident in the goodness of who he is leads us to a place of despair, leads us to a place of powerlessness. I can't change a thing. In one word, what happens to a man when he gets to the place of that kind of despair and powerlessness? I think what happens to most of us men on the inside of us is we begin to get significantly angry. How many of y'all have the spiritual gift of anger? Can I see a show of hands? I mean, look at that. Almost all of us, you know? Man, that thing that comes up, you go, where did that come from? I think of some of the ways I've spoken to my children through the years. Ooh. My oldest, Josh, I tell the story frequently in men's groups. You know, Josh was absolutely the most enjoyable kid on the planet, but his father didn't understand that. Me. Because Josh was an amazing adventurer, risk taker. There was nothing that was out of bounds for him to try, except he didn't want to ever hurt another person. But if he could create a little chaos in a situation, oh yeah. I mean, when he was in high school, you know, one year it was the smoke bombs that he let off during a pep rally that terrified the whole school. Probably not good in this day and age, but it was pretty funny if you think about it. But my favorite prank he ever pulled off was the prank during the AP English exam when he got there early and got up in the ceiling above the teacher's desk and in a small metal garbage can put a remote-controlled fart machine. Don't tell me that's not funny, okay? And throughout the whole test, we just kind of, you know, just let it rip. And can you imagine? And of course, the teacher, like many of you, didn't think it was funny. And Josh thought it was hilarious. Well, when I get the call saying it happened, I didn't see anything funny about it. And man, you know, Josh got his huge discipline at school, you know, suspended for 3 days and blah, 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 blah. But by the time I got him home, I was loaded for bear. Because see, I have hope that my kid's going to be a good kid and he's going to be responsible. He's going to make good choices. And when I heard this, something in me got this point of despair going, he's going to end up being a serial killer. Big jump. But that's kind of where I went, you know? Like, oh my gosh, what's wrong with this kid? And you know what gets motivated in me? I'll show him. He just needs a little bit of discipline. And my anger suddenly grew into what all of our anger does when we lose hope. It moved into the illusion that I can control the situation. It's not going the way I hoped, but by gosh, watch this. I mean, I came just short of looking at my son and say, you know, you think what you did was funny? Hold my beer and watch this. And y'all, I lit into my son verbally in a way that in Matthew 5, Jesus would say, I murdered him. I'm in his face and I'm screaming and I'm yelling, my teeth are flinched. How dare you treat her? And it was just like, I go off. How dare you treat a teacher like that? You will not show disrespect. And I did it so long till finally he broke and burst into tears. And I remember thinking, that's some good parenting right there. You know those moments when the Holy Spirit is saying, uh-uh. No, it's not. That was one of those moments for me. But I knew how to deny that. I know how to ignore that. Because, you know what? I perceived I had controlled the situation. Isn't that what we do? I have a hope. It's not going the way I thought it should. By golly, I'll get it back on track. Hey, do you think that was the last incident I had with Josh? Absolutely not. I didn't control anything. All I did was I damaged. See, here's the real danger, men, when we get down and our hope gets into despair and we get in this part of this cycle of the anger and control, we do damage not just to ourselves, but to those that we love all around us. Because now I'm trying to make it fit the categories I think it's supposed to fit in. So how is our hope restored? When we get to this place in this cycle, and remember, all I want to do this weekend with you is say, look, we are called to be people of faith, hope, and love. And the reality is, in a broken world, we all walk these three different cycles we're going to look at. How do we get back to the place of restoration of hope? How do we allow hope to come alive inside of us? How do we move from that place of, oh, woe is me, to from the place of, oh my gosh, I think I can control it? How do we move to a place of beginning to see hope restored? And with faith, when you got to this point, remember we talked about this is the place we have to be anchored down. We have to remember the past. I think the way our hope grows is when we decide to move to the place where we are courageous enough to begin grieving the future. What a weird phrase. To begin grieving the future. You know, when you think about grief, you think about it, I'm grieving my mom died. I'm grieving I lost my job. I'm grieving something that happened back there. But true grief is about grieving the future. The day I graduated college many years ago, I was getting ready to go. We were all outside. We were getting ready to go into the building where the ceremony is going to be, a beautiful May day. And I reached down to zip up the little gown that I'm wearing. And for some reason, the gown just wouldn't zip up. It was just, it was hung on something. And I got so angry and so mad, I couldn't control it. I'm getting so frustrated about it. And as I'm trying to get it up, I start crying. Weird response, right? But here's why I started crying. I started going, oh my gosh, my mom had died a year and a half earlier. If my mom were here, she knows how to fix this stuff. Why isn't she here? I finally get it going. I start walking in. I look over and I see my friend Karen, who at the time I thought would be my wife one day. And I'm walking along and I see Karen. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, if Karen and I get married one day, mom won't be there either. And I keep walking. I'm thinking, what if Karen and I have a little girl one day? My mom always wanted a daughter. She wouldn't even get to see her granddaughter one day. And y'all, I'm the guy walking into your college graduation and tears are streaming down my cheeks. It's not because I'm graduating, but because the reality is life will never be the way I thought it was going to be. Some of us have had those life-defining moments and we live every day with the reality is life is not what I thought it was going to be. How foolish would it be for me to go, well, by golly, I'll just go dig my mother up. I mean, forgive how rude this is, so she can help me with the zipper. I mean, I can't control this. I didn't realize it, but what I was doing that day was I was learning to grieve the future. Life isn't going to be the way I thought it was. Y'all, we make our plans, and rightly so. We create our agendas, and good for us. But when our agendas look like this, my agenda, and not like this, we're never going to be able to have a biblical hope, the way that we're called to. See, biblical hope says, I will take all my plans and my agendas and I will lay them up here and say, okay, God, I offer them to you. And even if they don't happen, I'll still trust that you're going to do something right for me. Daniel chapter 3 tells the story of I think it's Lloyd's great-great-grandfather, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, And in that story of the three Hebrew children, if you remember it, Nebuchadnezzar said, hey, you're going to worship my God. And if you don't, people in this land, bad news, I'm going to burn you to a crisp. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you remember the story. Hey, not going to bow to your idol. Sorry, you may have your God, but no, we've got our God. And in this moment of confrontation between Nebuchadnezzar, who really loves Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, he says, look, guys, you're going to have to bow down, paraphrase. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king, King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, our God is able to deliver us. God is able. Don't you love those three words? Why did they say that? God is able. They were anchored down. They had remembered the places in their lives and the places in the story of the children of Israel where God had shown up and God was able. And he showed up. He said, look, you can count that our God is faithful. So often we stop right there. We stop right there with the hallelujah. God is able. He'll deliver us because we know how the story ends. They get delivered. So God is able. He proved himself. The power of this passage, though, comes in the next sentence. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, then the God we serve, God is able, those three words, to deliver us from it. And then the next three words. But if not, we're still not bowing down to your idol. See, but if not are the words of hope. But if not are the words of grieving the future. But if not is the courage to say, look, I've got my plans, I've got my agendas, I'm hoping, but God, it's your agenda for my life trumps mine every time. So no matter, even if my plans don't work the way they want, I'm trusting that you're up to something great and even better for me than I can imagine. What kind of courage does it take to pray, throw me in a fire furnace, burn me up, and even if you burn me up, God, still, you're going to do something redemptively. You know, this is the story of the Bible over and over again. Read Hebrews 11 and insert in your sanctified imagination how many of those heroes of the faith were saying, but if not. Abraham says, sure, I'll kill my son. He reckoned that God would raise him from the dead because God had already promised. He looked back, he was faithful. He said, well, if I have to kill him, even if he doesn't provide a ram in the thicket, guess what? I have hope in a God who will redeem even this situation. Our God is able, but if not. See, when we live this way and begin to grieve the future and let go of our agenda and our need to control, it allows us to embrace God's plan for us. And gentlemen, that's where hope grows again. When I go, not my plan, but your plan be done. Seems like someone prayed words pretty similar to those in the garden, didn't he? Not my hope, but your plan be done. Not my will, but your will be done. Hope is not merely wishful thinking. It's not crossing our fingers and saying, maybe something better is going to happen this time. But hope is anchored in the truth that there is one who is faithful, and his plans far exceed mine. And so I release my future to trust his good plan for me. When we turn to our groups here in just a minute, I'm going to give you some questions to discuss for a few minutes, and then Jeff will come back up and wrap us up. But as we do, I want to give you Paul's words to consider. Because, man, some of us here this morning, if we're honest, we're in that place in this cycle where you go, man, my hope is pretty low right now. We have this misconception that we say often. We say that people often who can't make it, or people get this really deep place of despair, that they lose hope. I think there's a better way to say it. I think it's that they can't quit hoping, and that hope just becomes really disappointing. And then they don't have the tools to know how to get back to grieving that life could be differently. As we sat around, we asked four or five questions of each other. Hear Paul's words in 2 Corinthians 4. And therefore, we do not lose heart. It's a great hope phrase, isn't it? And therefore, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly, we are wasting away, world, flesh, the devil. Inwardly, we are being renewed, restored day by day. And then here's the grieving the future part. These light and momentary afflictions, they're achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. Paul, light and momentary afflictions. Remember what those were? Shipwreck, beaten, hunger. I mean, my goodness, his life. Light and momentary. I want that perspective. An eternal perspective that says there's something bigger than this, what's going on right now. So what do? We fix our eyes on what is seen. We fix our eyes not on what is seen, but on what is unseen, the anchor in heaven. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. Take about the next 20 minutes or so. I'll pass these out again. I'm going to have you guys help me. And we'll spend a few minutes just talking about the anchor of hope.